the number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Glad you can be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as, again, we take you through the night tonight, getting ready for the Super Bowl. You know, it was only a matter of time. I knew this was happening, but I didn't really want to say anything. But I figured in the world we live in now with media and blogs and people being able to just sort of write anything and stick it on the web and hopefully get enough hits and enough people sort of commenting on it, that we would get this storyline from Super Bowl 50. I knew it was a matter of time. But there it is. From the sports quotient, Brock Osweiler should start Super Bowl 50. I don't even know what sports quotient is, and I don't know who Kyle Schroeder is, but it's getting pull, it's getting play, and that's exactly what you want in this day and age of clicks. Peyton Manning should be benched for Super Bowl 50 for Brock Osweiler if the Broncos want to win. Okay, let's break this down for a second. One, this will never happen ever. But I think it does raise an interesting question. All right? Manning is not an effective quarterback right now. He's a game manager. And as I've been saying all week, the thing that makes me cringe is when I hear people say, well, you know, Manning's going to pull something out of his hat. You know he will. Or Manning's got a lot of magic left in him. No, wait, stop. Just because you wish it to be true doesn't mean it is going to happen. Just because you want to go down to Clicheville and believing Manning will be Manning when push comes to shove, Manning will be Manning. There's no evidence of this whatsoever. So the question that I want to raise with this is, not that Brock Osweiler should start, that's silly, but I did know this story was coming. But what do you do if you're Gary Kupiak, and what kind of leash is Peyton Manning on in this game? Is the end result to give Peyton Manning a chance to win a Super Bowl, or is the end result to give the Denver Broncos a chance to win the Super Bowl? Right? It's obviously the latter. It's obviously the team. So what do you do if, indeed, Manning is really struggling? We know this could be his last game. There's nothing to indicate that he's going to play for the Rams or anything else. That in all likelihood, this could be his last game. He'll go in the offseason and he'll think about it. And he'll go into the offseason and process his health. But this is going to be his last game in Denver. He is not coming back to the Broncos. Win or lose, he's not coming back to the Broncos. They have to make the move on Osweiler, and he is just right now a quarterback liability. He is clearly not the same quarterback that they are going to need to continue the winning ways. So, if you're Gary Kubiak and he throws a couple of early picks, do you go with Brock Osweiler, who's healthy and ready to go? Or do you let this guy close it out the way he wants? Because it's a tough situation to be in. And I know people will say, no, you have to break yourself away from that emotion. That is easier said than done. Now, do I believe in the end Gary Kubiak would make that move? Yeah, if it's obvious that Peyton Manning is not performing well and is a liability out there, he will make the move. But it's not going to be an easy move. This is the national stage. This is the world game. This is billion viewers around the planet. And you're going to bench the Hall of Fame quarterback in his final game, in possibly his final game. I don't think Brock Osweiler gives the Broncos a better chance of winning this game. I really don't. Because as Manning has struggled offensively this year, so has Osweiler struggled at times this year, to a point where Manning needed to come in and save the day. We talked to Adam Rank earlier this week. He made the same point I've made, which is all Osweiler had to do was play well against San Diego, and he could be the starting quarterback in the Super Bowl. But because he didn't, because the offense was once again stagnant, Manning had to come in, rescue the team to a win against the Chargers, led them to two playoff victories, albeit not playing all that great, but still two playoff victories. and the Denver Broncos find themselves in the Super Bowl. You can game manage anything you want. You can game manage all day, every day. But that game manager label doesn't mean effectiveness. And what if the Broncos really need first downs and touchdowns and they need to move the ball? I saw it last 2 weeks ago against the New England Patriots. When they needed first downs, they couldn't get it. When they needed to have ball control, they couldn't do it. The Patriots had more than enough chances to win that game. In fact, when you really think about the Patriots in that game deciding to go for it instead of kicking a field goal with 6 minutes left, what were they afraid of? Not getting the ball back? Against who? They absolutely controlled the Denver offense in the second half of that game. As a matter of fact, they got the ball back twice after that field goal, after that fourth down. They had control of the Broncos. So again, if you're Gary Kubiak, this is the question you have to ask. It is not Manning all the way through, is it? It could be. But what if he struggles? See, the question I always ask about teams when it comes to starting quarterbacks who are injured or struggling or whatnot, it's a question all the coaches ask. What percentage of my current starter is better than 100% of my backup? Okay? Cam Newton, if Newton is struggling but is healthy, he stays in the game all the way through. He works himself out of a slump. He's not getting benched for whoever the backup quarterback of the Carolina Panthers is. He's not. He's going to work his way out. Outside of injury, he plays the whole game. Is that the same with Peyton Manning? I don't know. I really don't know. It's kind of ridiculous to think that I don't know, but I really don't. Because that second half against the Patriots, and for a lot of the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, there was a real struggle. The one thing that Manning didn't do was turn the ball over. He didn't throw any picks. He was a lot more efficient that way than he had been throwing 17 at the beginning of the year. But other than that, wasn't like he was rifling through for first downs. I think Manning gives us the best effort he can. I really do. I think that's the kind of player he is. And I can't tell you that's going to be good enough. And unlike other people who will say, if Manning gives me his best effort, it's good enough for me. He's Peyton Manning. I don't think that's true. I do not think that's true. This has to be a complete win for Denver. It has to be offensively and defensively. They've got to score. They're not going to win this game 10-7. The Denver defense is very good. It's not that good in terms of completely, utterly stopping Cam Newton and the Panthers. The Panthers are going to get points. They may not get 49 points, but they're getting some points. The Denver defense may slow them down, but they're not shutting them out. So Manning and the Broncos are going to have to do something offensively. And it may be that they don't necessarily have to do much. We talked about Super Bowl 36 in the last hour. On the anniversary of Tom Brady's first Super Bowl. Look, the Patriots were outgained by almost 200 yards in that game. I think it was over 200 yards by the Rams. Where did the Patriots get most of their points? Off of turnovers. Off of interceptions of Kurt Warner. Of fumbles. A sloppy offensive game. A defense that was very opportunistic to get the turnovers. If Denver does that and Manning doesn't have to drive lengths of the field and doesn't have to sustain 12, 13 play drives of 80 yards, that's how Denver wins this game. That's how Denver can win this game. Newton gets a little careless, starts throwing some picks, or an avalanche starts to ensue. We've seen that before in the Super Bowl. Just ask the Buffalo Bills. There is a defensive angle to this for Denver that allows me not to put them away in this game. The Carolina Panthers are a very complete team, offensively and defensively. The Broncos are not. Defensively, they're fantastic. Offensively, they've been a liability pretty much the whole season. Outside of a couple of games, they have not played a real complete offensive game all year. Manning although winning games looked terrible in the first seven, Osweiler had a couple of great moments. I mean, Manning had the game against the Packers in which he was really, really good. Osweiler just had a couple of games in which he was good. Other than that, problems, problems, problems. It's going to extend itself into this game, but defense could actually help them out. Osweiler, does he even see playing time? It could happen, but in the end, I doubt it. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 15 minutes from now, Jason Hare is going to join us. He is director of a documentary that's going to be on ESPN 30 for 30 series on Thursday. It's on the 85 Bears. I had a chance to talk to him earlier today. I kid you not, I could have done a half an hour with this guy. Instead, we did about 10 minutes. I could have done a half an hour on the 85 Bears. The 85 Bears, we are 30 years removed from that team. And there still has not been a team like that team. Let me just give you an example of how unique that team was to the time. Imagine if Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers put out a video talking about the Super Bowl. Imagine if that team had put out a Super Bowl shuffle video. How ripped they would be by the media today. And the Bears, it was just, of course they're talking about the Super Bowl. The Bears were that dominant of a team. They ripped through the playoffs. I mean, they went through the New York Giants and the LA Rams and did not give up a point. In two playoff games, they did not give up a point. Back-to-back shutouts, that's how good that defense was. They played the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 20. I was talking to him about it. There were so many different characters on that team. There was, obviously Ditka and Buddy Ryan. There was obviously the defense. There was Jim McMahon. There was Walter Payton. There was Refrigerator Perry. I mean, it was a real collection of top guys, but they all had little stories. McMahon was this rebel putting up his bandanas, Roselle and whatnot. There was Refrigerator Perry, who became a national icon running the football, getting endorsements and commercials and all that other stuff. I mean, they were a fearful team. You watch them, you'd watch them and go, what are they going to do? This was not a let's all gravitate and hate the Bears. I mean, I can remember people just thinking this was one of the best teams they'd ever seen in their life. And it's unfortunate. And I say this as a guy who grew up in New England and knew what a big deal it was for the Patriots even to get to the Super Bowl, even though they got throttled. But it really was unfortunate that the Bears didn't get to play the Miami Dolphins in that Super Bowl, because that was the only team that beat them. It was the only team that really scored. I mean, they scored like 38 points against them, which was really remarkable, given that that season the Bears were averaging like 12 points a game, giving up 12 points a game, and the Dolphins put up 38 on them. And that would have been probably one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time, given the matchups. But instead, they got the Patriots, who were literally way over their head. I mean, just way over their head in playing the Chicago Bears. But it was one of those Super Bowls where it was the exclamation point on one of the greatest seasons ever put together. And listen, I don't talk about other teams like we talk about the 85 Bears. We just don't. People don't even remember what years guys won Super Bowls. Like, you can talk about the 07 Patriots, the team that went 16-0, but they didn't win the Super Bowl. The Steelers had great Super Bowl years, but nobody talks about the 05 Steelers or the 79 Steelers or whatnot, the same way that the 85 Bears are discussed.
Yeah, is there another team that you just say the year and the team and you're like, oh, that team?
I don't. I mean, the 2000 Ravens, maybe, but
yeah,
that's a stretch.
Yeah, but yeah, that's a stretch, and that's just because a lot
offensively
of people,
they were so bad.
Right. A lot of people try and compare them to the 85 team just because of the defenses, but you hear 85 Bears and you know exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And remember, one thing about this team, and you're talking about all the everything this team did. The morning after they lost to the Dolphins, that's when they did the Super Bowl shuffle.
That's right. That's right. After that, yeah.
They
so here they were
up,
kind
they
of
were hungover, and they made the Super Bowl shuffle.
Made a Super Bowl shuffle. Can you only imagine if Cam Newton and the Panthers did that?
Oh, gosh.
Imagine if
with
the Panthers.
Twitter now and stuff.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine the hellstorm that would have rained down on that team if they had the audacity to put together a Super Bowl shuffle video. I can't imagine.
Really, any team now.
Any team now. Forget it. Even if they're likable.
Or the social media era came out with something like that, it would be one of the biggest things you'd ever see because you'd get a reaction from every single person in the world.
We're so offended now by everything.
Right.
How dare they?
I would love it. I
would love
it. Yes.
Love it.
Celebrate. As long as you don't go like crazy, crazy celebration, have fun. This is a game. We're playing. It's a game.
I got a friend of mine out in Colorado that I've known for about a decade, and he's a really cool guy, but he's a trash talker, and he doesn't like the Broncos. He's a Cowboys fan, and he lives in Colorado, and he doesn't like the Broncos, and he's a trash talker, and he just talks, and he's on Facebook and all that stuff. He talks. Well, he's been ripping the Broncos all season. Peyton Manning, blah 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 blah. Mr. Interception, blah 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 blah. Brock Osweiler's a joke. Right? He's just ripping them. Well, fine. So here are the Broncos in the Super Bowl, and he posts something about how, well, you know, football just brings out the worst in people, and I hear hiking and skiing in the wintertime is better anyway, so I'm quitting. And I thought to myself, you're missing the best part of, like this is, you're going to quit football because the best part is trash talking? Like, right. You can't handle trash talking? That's the best part of following sports. You can't do that. Like you can't dish it out and not take it. Dish it out and have fun when it comes back your way. The Bears, that was such an in-your-face video, but nobody doubted that they should have made it.
Right.
nobody doubted that they should make it. I mean, my father was a huge Giants fan, so as a kid, you know, I'd watch the Giants in playoffs. So I remember that the playoff game against the Bears at Soldier Field that year. I remember it was so windy in that game, the Giant punter punted it like 5 yards. I just like kicked the ball and the wind just blew it back. And the Bears were just crushing opponents. I mean, just crushing opponents. And McMahon was like just the center of it all. He was on offense, just the, you know, the king quarterback. They had Walter Payton. Fridge was running in touchdowns. It was great. Absolutely great. So again, Jason Hare, 30 for 30. And guys, the guys who do 30 for 30s are great. It's the best. It's one of the best things ESPN
yes,
has ever done.
It is. He did this
it
one
really
with Vince
is.
Vaughn. Vince Vaughn, like,
he did this. Oh, Vince Vaughn's on it?
Yeah.
Good.
I'm pretty sure he co-directed or co-produced something. But Vince Vaughn had a big part in this.
I love the 30 for 30s. I really do. I, you know, and this goes back, when did they start? Like 2009, I want to say?
Yeah,
when we really
started there.
I mean, there was one on the USFL that featured Donald Trump. I mean, those early ones. I love the U. Like both,
yes,
the both
U's
of them.
Are really good.
The U's were the best.
The one I really liked was
best.
On Levon Hernandez and El Duque.
Yeah, that was
getting
great.
Out of Cuba and stuff. I really liked that one as a baseball
that
fan.
That was really great. My favorite one that I watch, and it's weird because it's none of it is in English, is the two Escobars.
Yes, that was very good.
A lot of reading,
but worth it.
But jaw-dropping.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. Talking about shooting, like killing officials after games. Like Pablo Escobar had officials shot and killed after losses. Like just the chaos
should
and
make
the
people
violence.
Quit complaining about Cam dabbing.
Oh, I know. And you know what's funny? When Andres Escobar kicked in his own goal, people in America, I was working in radio at the time, people in America made jokes that he would be shot when he got back to Colombia. And then he did get shot when he got back to Colombia. And everyone went, oh my God, I was just kidding. I didn't think they actually would do that. All right, we'll talk 30 for 30 about the Bears next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us as we get ready for the Super Bowl. And coming up on Thursday on ESPN, a look at the 1985 Chicago Bears on their 30 for 30 series. Jason Hare joins us. He's the director of the documentary on that great team from 30 years ago. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. All right. So I was alive during that time, and I remember how dominant this team was. But for those people who are 20, 25, 26, and just look at this and go, oh, just a 15-1 Super Bowl champion, why are the Chicago Bears that year still heavily regarded as one of the best teams ever?
Well, statistically, they were dominant. That defense is routinely that's where the discussion starts as far as single-season defenses in the history of the NFL. Is the 85 Bears. And then offensively, a lot of people overlook this, but they were second in scoring that year. And they had Walter Payton, who many regard as the greatest running back of all time, as they're in their backfield. And then they had Jim McMahon in his only Pro Bowl season as their quarterback. So I think that when people discuss these greatest teams ever, you know, younger people may just hear about these guys and think they're a bunch of old guys, but they were dominant. And they were dominant in an era when this was not like Red Grange era. This is Dan Marino. This is Joe Theismann. They're playing against some big guys.
What was the circumstances after they won the Super Bowl that sort of prevented them from having a little mini dynasty?
Well, we delve into it a bit in the doc, and we ask the guys why they think this was just a one-shot deal. My personal opinion after talking to guys and doing all the research is that they couldn't keep their quarterback healthy. If you look at the common denominator of all those playoff games that they lost, both in 84, when I think they would have gone to the Super Bowl the year before as well, if McMahon were healthy in the NFC Championship against the Niners. And then in the years after, their only losses, big losses, came when McMahon was not under center.
You talked about their offense and brought up Jim McMahon. How important was he to this Super Bowl run? Because, as you said, this defense, nobody scored on them, and it's easy to have a quarterback ride that. But how important was Jim McMahon?
Hugely important. I mean, the difference in their season or when they went from good to great in that season was the Thursday night game that they played in Week 3 in Minnesota. And Jim was sidelined and begged Dicka to let him in the game because they were down 17-9 right after the second half and just showing no life whatsoever. Jim comes in, first play from scrimmage. He has a screen pass, but he sees Willie Gault streaking down the middle, throws it to him for a 60, 70-yard touchdown pass. Next pass he throws, touchdown again. Then he throws a third touchdown pass. That was his coming out party nationally when people started to know him as Mad Mac with the headband and the crazy haircut. And he also rallied those guys around him because playing the NFL takes a certain amount of toughness, and these are guys who knew that their quarterback would go through walls for them to win a game.
We know that Mike Dicka and Buddy Ryan didn't get along. Did the defensive players get along with Mike Dicka?
Yes. Everyone on that team regarded Dicka as the leader of that team, make no mistake. I mean, he and Buddy may have had their differences, and those differences I think are embellished. I think they didn't get along, but I don't think that there were fistfights in the locker room. In fact, I know there weren't, according to the players. And it was an arranged marriage. But look at what they did with that marriage. By the end of the doc, with three decades of perspective, both of these guys say that they reached heights that they had never reached with the other guy, and they never reached that height again without the other guy. So I do think, though, that Dicka commanded a ton of respect in that locker room, and Buddy as well. You know, Buddy got along with a lot of the offensive guys as well. The two of them didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but they didn't need to because Buddy's defense was his and Dicka ran the other side of the locker room during the week.
William Refrigerator Perry was a cultural icon at the time. Was he a good football player?
William Refrigerator Perry was a tremendous athlete. He could dunk a basketball, and he was pushing 350 pounds when he came in the league. He was a great football player, unblockable at Clemson, All-American coming out of school. We have a couple of plays that we show, and I was shocked at his speed. He comes off the weak side and makes a tackle. He's three times the width of anyone on the field and twice the speed of anyone on the field. They run a sweep to the right, and he comes off the left side. He's the one who makes the tackle of this guy before he breaks it upfield. And then another play, a guy runs it up the middle from him. This is, again, when he's on Clemson. He picks the guy up like a baby and starts running the other way with him. He was just a tremendous, just a force, a massive, massive man and an athletic force. He didn't take the greatest care of himself and wasn't the most disciplined guy, which is a shame because he had Hall of Fame talent. In a sci-fi body, but you know you have to ask what would have been if he was more disciplined.
Jason Hare joins us, director of the 30 for 30 documentary on the 85 Chicago Bears. It'll air Thursday on ESPN. We know that he also ran the football. Whose idea? How did that come about for the Bears that year?
Well, the NFC Championship game that I mentioned before in the 84 season in January of 85, the Bears lost that 23-0. And in the waning moments of that game, to twist the knife, so to speak, Bill Walsh inserts an offensive lineman named Guy McIntyre into the backfield for the Niners. And this was meant just to thumb his nose at Mike Ditka and the Bears. And that's that. And that was kind of like the adding insult to injury. The next year, when they played them in week 6 of the 85 season, Buddy Ryan was not a fan of Perry's. He thought he was undisciplined and out of shape. And Ditka's the one who insisted that they draft him. So he was kind of Ditka's pet project, so to speak. And Ditka then taught him how to run the football. We actually have the video of the day that he's teaching Fridge how to run the ball. And then when they, in turn, went to San Francisco that week 6 and beat the Niners on their own turf, guess who comes in at the end of the game? That's the Fridge. So he runs the ball twice then, and then the next week he scores a touchdown in Monday Night Football, and then all of a sudden he's all over your TV. He's on Letterman, he's with Bob Hope, he's got a Coke commercial, he's got a McDonald's commercial. That all happened because Mike Ditka was pissed off at the Niners from what they did to him the year before.
Jason, he scored a Super Bowl touchdown. Walter Payton did not. Did you guys explore how Walter felt about all that after the Super Bowl?
We do. We explore it. Well, obviously it's difficult to know exactly how Walter felt because he's not around to tell us. But yeah. We do explore from many angles why he didn't score and whether or not it's okay that he didn't score. And I think you'll be surprised at the candor of some of the guys when they discuss that.
In terms of the Super Bowl, I remember hearing a story about how Buddy Ryan was speaking to his defensive players and just like Dan Hampton threw a chair and stuff. Their love for Buddy Ryan. Talk a little bit about that because I think that was so important for their success.
Yeah, I mean he was a father figure. It was very much a paternal figure in that locker room because he commanded such respect. Buddy was a Korean War sergeant. This is a guy who was straight military. He would break you down and build you back up. But once he built you back up, you were his for life. And he adored those players and does to this day, as you'll see in the doc. He can't speak that well, but his brain is still sharp. And we figure out a way for him to speak back to these guys in the course of the doc. But if you go to Buddy's house in the basement, he's got all these pictures all over his basement. You could charge admission to his basement. And his caretakers... A couple of women from Kentucky, they don't even know the history that is down there. I mean, she pulled out his sweater that he's wearing when they carried him off the field as if it was a hoodie from my closet. I said, oh, my God, that should be in Canton. And she said, oh, well, do you want to take a shot of this? But if you go in that basement, there's one wall of all Bears photographs. There's one wall of all Vikings. There's one wall of all Eagles. And then there's one wall of all of his family and him. And you should see the love, the handwritten notes from each of the players on each of the pictures on those walls. It's unbelievable the amount of loyalty that he instilled in these guys over the course of his career.
Jason, I grew up in New England, so I was all into Squish the Fish and Bury the Bears and all that stuff.
I was Newton, Massachusetts, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Did the Bears want to play the Dolphins? I mean, I know a championship's a championship, but the only team that beat them, did they want to see the Dolphins?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion. Hampton, in the doc, even says, if we overlooked anybody that season, was the Patriots, because we knew that we killed them in week 2 or 3 they played them that year. And there was no way the Patriots were going to beat them. So I think they wanted the Dolphins. These guys wanted to prove to everybody that game was a fluke and that they overlooked them and they didn't prepare for them enough. And who knows what would have happened. You know, I grew up, like I said, in Newton in the same area, and I was – thrilled that the Patriots made it. I was 9 years old. But looking back, it kind of robbed the football viewing public of what easily would have been the most anticipated Super Bowl matchup to date, and probably to this date it would have been. But certainly Super Bowl 20, that would have been the one. Unfortunately, the game with the Patriots was over before it really started.
Jason Hare again, the director of 30 for 30 on the 85 Bears Thursday night ESPN. Great talking with you. Great reminiscing. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, we reminisce about the Super Bowl loss of the Patriots at Super Bowl 20. How about a Super Bowl loss in Super Bowl 42? We'll recap this date in history when the Giants shocked the world. Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony. Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Oh, we take you back in the Wayback Machine on this date in Super Bowl history. We go back to February 3rd. Super Bowl 42. This was played in the 2008, February of 2008, featuring the 16-0 New England Patriots, who were 18-0 by the time we got around to the Super Bowl, against the New York Giants, who got there by going on the road in the NFC Championship game and beating the Green Bay Packers in a freezing cold, cold game. It was absolutely freezing, where they went out and beat Brett Favre, where the Patriots got to the Super Bowl by beating Philip Rivers, who had an injured foot, and the San Diego Chargers. But this was a very unique Super Bowl matchup because right before the season had started, or at least right around the start of the season, we got involved with Spygate for the New England Patriots. And then they responded by going perfect the rest of the way, all the way through the regular season. But that Super Bowl, they had a chance to become the only unbeaten team at 19-0. Remember, the Dolphins had gone 17-0 to win the Super Bowl. So the Patriots were trying to complete this perfect season in the year that they were accused of cheating. There was also a storm of, well, we don't want them to have this from the American public. And there were a lot of people that, I remember doing a story about the polls, about the Super Bowl polls, and was like overwhelmingly in favor of the Giants, to wanting them to win the Super Bowl. It was unique because when you think about it, here was a chance for a team to go set a record, for a team to have a historic mark, and people did not want them to have it. Not that team. Anybody else, fine, but not that team. So the New York Giants came in underdogs. There were a lot of people who were predicting, because the Patriots had a very high-scoring offense. Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes. They had Randy Moss. That they were just going to tear up the Giants. But if you go back to week 17 of that year, the Giants played the Patriots really tough and learned a lot in that game. And Plaxico Burress even predicted that the game would be very low scoring, put the game around 20-17, that kind of thing. But people still looked at the Patriots and Tom Brady and said, yeah, but that's really going to be hard to do. That's really going to be hard to do. Well, the game started out well for the Giants. They kicked a field goal and they led early 3-0, but the Patriots came back and Lawrence Maroney with a touchdown run made it 7-3. But the scoring started to really slow down in this one, and that's ended up being the score at halftime, 7-3. And in the third quarter, there was no scoring. So it was 7-3 going into the fourth. Now, if you're a Patriots fan, this is where the game makes you a little nervous. Because anytime you play anybody in the National Football League where the talent margin is not very big, even amongst the best and the worst teams, in the Super Bowl, now you've got a game. And anything can happen. And any lucky bounce or any twist of a ruling or anything along those lines could result in your team losing this game. If you're going to put this game away, you've got to do it if you're the Patriots. Don't let the Giants hang around. So here it was, 7-3 New England going into the fourth quarter. But then Eli Manning completed a pass to David Tyree for a touchdown, and that made it 10-7. In the fourth quarter, Tom Brady hit Randy Moss for a touchdown, and it made it 14-10. And the Giants had a chance to march down the field and try to get a touchdown. Now, at this point in the game, I don't know about you, but I remember the Super Bowl party I was at. We thought this game was over. Once Randy Moss caught that touchdown, we thought this game was over. As the Giants are driving down the field, because there's only about a minute or so left, the Giants faced 3rd and 5. And what resulted on this play is not only Super Bowl historic, but goes down in the NFL history books as one of the most amazing things most of us had ever seen. It was
pressure from Thomas off the edge. Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree. Inside the 25. And a timeout taken. my God. This ball's thrown, and Tyree just goes up for it like a basketball player. Harrison trying to knock it down.
I don't think those guys, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on Fox TV, I don't think it occurred to them later what kind of catch that was.
Yeah, I was listening to the, you know, trying to get the highlight there, and I kept listening and listening. And finally, like 30 seconds later, Buck's just like, he pinned that against his helmet.
That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
It took him like 5 replays to realize, holy cow, what just happened?
He jumps up, pins the ball, and holds it on his helmet, and it never touches the ground.
It's amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. When I still watch it, we're like, what, 8 years later? When I still watch it, I go, oh, my God. If that ball hits the ground, it's incomplete and the Giants are facing 4th down. He has to hold it on his helmet and hold it so it, the tip of the football isn't hitting the ground as he's falling backwards. It's remarkable. So here's life for the New York Giants. On the 3rd down, they complete it to David Tyree. And then Plaxico Burress, who predicted that the game would be low scoring, is wide open down in the corner of the end zone. Eli Manning hits him with a beautiful pass from 13 yards. The Giants go up 17-14. Now, at this point, there's still time left on the clock. It was only 35 seconds left, but there was still plenty of time left on the clock. The Patriots needed a field goal to tie this game, but they had Randy Moss. And Tom Brady took a couple of big shots downfield at Randy Moss, but he didn't complete those passes. And when the Giants, who put pressure on Tom Brady all day, finally got to him, it was over, and the New York Giants pulled off the upset of beating the New England Patriots, spoiling the perfect season and giving the Giants their 3rd Super Bowl title. Yahoo Sports Radio.